Hello and welcome to Master of Our Domain, the podcast that was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about the classical world, TV shows about the classical world, things of that nature, whatever takes our interest in a given week. And this week it is the Plague Cast. I'm Milo Edwards and I'm joined as ever by my intrepid co-host Phoebe Roy and Patrick Wyman. How are we doing?
Okay. I don't have the plague. It's just you two. You're the plague boys.
Yeah, Milo's plague incipient, mine fully throated, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah, just call me the throat goat.
Yeah, wait, yeah.
Is that
I'm more of a just the tip situation, but you're Nancy Reagan and whatever you've got.
That was both the plague and also a reaction to bringing up Rancy Nagin in the context of throat goats.
Rancy Nagin.
Rancy Nagin. That's a new.
Rancy Nagin.
Rancy Nagin. Give me a break, guys. This is my first time back in the podcast minds after a break. It's gonna get me. I'm gonna need a little while to get my pickaxe back in working order here.
Yeah, we're loosening Pat up.
Yeah,
he's like a
We're the kind
he's been in. He's been in the hospital. Now he's back on the front line.
We're the proverbial
exactly
honey that Pat needs for his throat.
Mm. I have been taking honey flavored cold and flu medicine. And the honey is not an improvement on the standard brand. It's still bad.
I was going to say that really feels like mixing up like signifier and signified. Like, you know, honey as a substance is supposed to soothe your throat, but I don't think putting honey flavoring in a cold and flu power has any.
Look, man, in 21st century America, this is as good as we're going to get. Like, you expect us to have actual honey here? Like, this is not unless it's been run through 17 different processing filters.
Oh, the bees have all been killed. Yeah, there's my girlfriend's like neighbor. She's from Perth in Australia, and her family are like clearly rich. But one of their businesses is they have like a honey farm. So periodically, yeah, we just get given jars of this like artisanal honey from Australia, and the price tags that are on it are terrifying. I'm like, who is spending this much money on honey? I need to know.
Artisanal honey imported from Australia is a great argument against global oligarchy. It's like really, we can't do that here. We can't. I feel like beekeeping, find me an apiary, man. I feel like that's not that hard to do. We could build them shits anywhere.
Find me an apiary and I'll show you a hobbyist.
I mean, beekeeping does sound kind of fun though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the next big thing.
Yeah. I knew a guy who ran an artisanal honey business in Portland, but that's not even in the top 100 strangest professions in Portland, Oregon.
Oh yeah. Your Portland house share. It's like saw costs if you can keep your bees in the, you know, strictly in the utility room. we've had trouble with bee leakage into the communal areas.
Exactly.
Bee incursions.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm 100% certain that has happened more than once in Portland in the last decade.
100%. Yeah. Like, just like the only catch of your rent is that there are a colony of bees living in the next room.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They're managed. It's not a wild colony, but they are nevertheless.
Okay, it's house meeting time, because I sat down on that sofa and I sat on a bee. And I want to know what steps that we're taking as a house to prevent that from happening again.
Yeah. A patronizingly Photoshopped set of rules where it's like, be better. Yeah. Where should we be? In the hive. Where should we not be? On the sofa. Thank you. If we could all be more cognizant about the bees, that would be great.
Trying to work up to something about a drag act who has the bees on stage and they're the queen bee.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm not happy with it, though.
I mean, it is fitting because bees are a topic of not a lot of importance, but passing importance in today's episode of Chaos.
That's right. Bees do come up. It's funny that could be, you could be talking about the Netflix show that you watched or also just about the podcast that we're doing now. Bees are a topic of passing importance in this episode of Chaos. Yes, we are here to talk about Chaos, season 1, episode 5. I'm going to keep saying season 1, even though we know. It's technically season 1.
Yeah, but there's no way. There's no, nobody is going to.
No, and increasingly I'm like, and nor should there be.
No,
huh? Nor should there be.
That's so not what these, the buzz is saying.
God damn it. So I feel like this show is best watched in like groups of two or three episodes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this was because it is, if you're trying to watch it week to week, it is extremely confusing.
Mm.
But because of my enforced absence from last week's episode, I watched 4 and 5 back to back, and I found that I enjoyed the experience much more.
Oh, okay. You're having a great session on the Benjamin with those two episodes.
No, because I've been sick. I had to watch them completely sober.
Ah.
This is,
oh, you're not a real weed guy. You're not one of those people who believes that weed can cure any ailment.
No, no. I'm like, look, there are limits even to my idiocy. Like not a lot of limits, mind you, but some. And where I draw the line is having an upper respiratory infection and inhaling just buckets of God knows what kind of chemicals that happen to, as a byproduct, contain THC.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. That is
I love that you've spent this entire series just speed running different methodologies and techniques that make this show tolerable to watch. It's like, no, you're doing it wrong. You need to be stoned. Oh, no, you're doing it wrong. You need to watch them in batches.
Mm.
Look, okay. Well, I will say, I was a little bit on the fence after the last episode for which I was present with you guys. After watching these two, I'm all in.
All in?
Oh. And yeah, because it is so completely committed to its own batshit world building and its complete lack of explanation of how and why things are the way they are, that for me, and I understand if other people don't feel this way, but for me, it's extraordinarily immersive. And I just buy it. I'm like, this world makes sense to me, even though, because it doesn't make sense, this world makes sense to me.
Interesting.
That everything is just a given.
Okay.
They're not doing some kind of like George R.R. Martin discussion of the tax systems of Westeros or like the laws of how magic works or how the power of the gods functions in some like baseline way. They're not like writing that stuff out. It just is. It's just a world that is, that has these things in it, has these people in it, has these powers in it. And people kind of have to work around that.
Mm.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate the not trying to explain the minutiae of the technical aspects of godhood in this world. Like, no, they're just gods and gods can do shit. Gods can cause natural disasters. Sure. Great. Okay. And what can we do about it? Fuck all. So
At no point have I said that I want there to be a technical discussion of how the gods have powers. I just want them to decide on some kind of timeline. That's all. That's all.
Mm-hmm. See, that's a much more salient complaint for me than people who are like, you know, I don't understand the nature of the power transfer between mortals and the gods, and I would like for there to be some sort of mana counter that they have to use when they're causing natural disasters. That's some real like
a Games Workshop style complaint.
Yeah, as
are
as
they
a
rolling
Dungeons
dice?
And Dragons,
how does this work?
As a Dungeons & Dragons guy, I find that offensive. Like, I find that commitment to rules lawyering, a creative work of fiction, to be indescribably offensive.
Yeah. I remember once, I've only ever played Dungeons & Dragons once, and it was, well, I played one game of Dungeons & Dragons, but I played it on several occasions, because we were doing it for the Trash Future Twitch stream. And a friend of the show, Devin, kindly agreed to organize this game of Dungeons & Dragons. And Riley was very excited about the game of Dungeons & Dragons, whereas I'd never played it before. And at a certain point, Devin gave up hosting this game of Dungeons & Dragons because Riley attempted to financialize elements of the Dungeons & Dragons world that we were in. Like, he was trying to, like, rent properties and then rent them back out at higher. And then Devin was like, fuck this, I'm not doing it anymore. And so, yeah, that guy would be furious about the power transfer between the gods and mortals in this show.
you know, I say this with absolute love and affection in my heart, but nothing about the story you just told me is surprising.
Oh, no, absolutely. And also, like, just like the idea of finally being able to actually properly irritate Devon, the most patient person on earth.
Yeah, it was an interesting combo because Devon was both irritated and also finding it quite funny at the same time. It was like an interesting hinterland between the...
That's really the sweet spot if you're going to be a dungeon master for a campaign, is like you want to be both amused and incredibly irritated at the people that you're spending your time around and putting this work into creating this world for them. Like, exactly. You want to be mad at them. That's part of the appeal of the job. Sure.
Yeah, ideally. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're happy with the players, then you've done something wrong. Like, no, like dungeon masters are not happy people. That's not the point of the exercise. You're not supposed to enjoy this in some existential way.
Absolutely not.
Just like Zeus isn't supposed to be happy.
Yeah. But yeah, so this episode,
that's
feel like...
That's interesting philosophically.
And now this is partly because I watched this episode like at psycho hours at like I'd like worked until like midnight and I was like, now to watch Chaos. I think probably I haven't got the clearest idea of what happened in this episode.
But again, you know what? I think that's actually appropriate. I think that's actually a pretty good way to have gone into this, because the deeper we get into it, I'm curious as to what you guys think about it. I think there is an extent to which madness and disorientation is baked into the fabric of it. Sure. And it is supposed to be fucking confusing. Like Dionysus and this is something we've talked about before, is not just the god of drunkenness and revelry and fun. He's also the god of madness. And I feel like one of the major themes of this show is how any sort of obsession will bring you into madness. It will make you compromise who you are and what you think you believe and what you think matters in pursuit of these overarching insane goals. Like it will just drive you crazy to be that obsessed with anything. And the episode 5, I think, is kind of the turning point in that, like the thematic turning point that we get, where Orpheus is just beating the shit out of the guy that he swore a pact with.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I do see what you're saying, Pat. I think that is a spectacularly generous reading.
Yeah, probably.
I think watching this and being like, no, it's supposed to not make any fucking sense. I don't think it's supposed to not make any fucking sense.
I've been trying.
That's fair.
Also, I don't think the kind of the general feeling of like kind of did somebody hit me on the head? Is there a localized gas leak in my house? What the fuck is happening? I don't think that's deliberate. And actually, Milo and I discussed last week about how weird it is not to give Dionysus any Dionysian attributes. Mm. He's sending people mad. Like he's kind of going along with Orpheus doing something mad, but he's doing this because he's decided that he like needs to kind of help people. Like if they were explicit with actually going down to the underworld to collect your dead wife, that's the project of a maniac, that's the actions of an oddball, and Dionysus is there deliberately being like, yeah, fucking do it, as opposed to like, yeah, I'm gonna help you. He doesn't, that there are no revels, there's no orgiastic behavior. We've only seen him be orgiastic once, and that is in the first episode, and that was honestly more like an episode of Skins.
Coming home to the wife, and she's like, did you agree on a podcast that rescuing me from hell would be the act of a madman? Is that how you feel? I see how it is.
Yeah, that was pretty limited orgy. I see what you're saying, I'm gonna disagree with you just a little bit. Because Orpheus would not be in position to do any of this if Dionysus was not helping him do it.
Yeah, but he's not helping him do it because it's a mad thing to do. He's helping him do it to be helpful.
But that's the nature of the gods.
But Dionysus
Dionysus
is never helpful. Dionysus is just chilling.
But that's the whole thing, though. At least the way I see it is like when you align yourself with the gods, or you sacrifice something to the gods, or you call upon the gods for aid, which I think in some kind, in some metaphorical sense, is what Orpheus is doing here. Like, when you call upon the gods for aid, you get the good and the bad with that. And the bad part of that is that now Dionysus has put Orpheus in position to descend fully into madness. So he's taken, Dionysus has taken the tendency that Orpheus already has, and while Dionysus thinks he's helping him and he's doing a good deed, he is driving Orpheus further and further and further down the path of madness.
I do see what you're saying. Pat. I think it's a very generous reading. Because at least in part, because the stuff with Orpheus, and him fighting with Anatole, who then gets sort of hoofed over the side, it's made pretty explicit that he's not really acting of his own volition. They're all acting as engines and agents of this prophecy. So even though Dionysus is an important part of that, this is stated explicitly at the start of episode 5, he doesn't have any more agency than the human characters do. So the idea that he is just acting like Dionysus I agree it would be good if that is the point they're making, but since they keep saying all of these people have their part to play in the prophecy, and you're like, just what part? Fuck it. It's episode 5. You need to tell me. Stop teasing the plot.
Yeah.
and do the plot.
Yeah, promises were made at the start of this episode to explain the plot that were not kept.
Yeah, that were not kept.
Yeah.
Prometheus writes some checks, some narrator
that
checks
his liver can't cash.
That he is literally refusing to cash. That he's writing the checks that, you know, on a checkbook for a bank that no longer exists.
Even the great Stephen Delane in a Speedo can't rescue plot holes that we've.
Yeah,
that we've
he's writing checks on fucking Northern Rock checkbook.
Oh, R.I.P.
R.I.P.
All right.
Gone but not forgotten.
No, indeed not.
Not forgotten.
They rocked too hard.
They rocked too close to the sun.
Yeah, yeah. And sadly their capital ratios were out of whack. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got a lot of objections to this episode. Okay. I'm starting to find Prometheus a little bit of a know-it-all.
Yeah. So,
it feels a bit like he knows he's got gossip, but he's not telling you.
So one plot that we get is that Ari, aka Ariadne, gets a little video about the past from the Furies, all about Minos. And
I've got an objection instantly.
Right.
This happens quite a lot in this show, where you think something is supposed to be a kind of little oblique little reference, and then it turns out that it's just a coincidence and they don't understand that this would be a kind of appropriate reference. So when the Furies are showing Ari a video, why are they showing it? Why is it a video? Tell us what year it's meant to be. Tell us what year it's meant to be. I don't want lore.
They're showing her a Betamax.
Yeah, like I don't want some kind of long description of who the kind of the ancient royal families are. Like, I don't need that. That's not required. I would like to know just roughly some kind of timeline.
Yeah, the point of divergence between this world and our own is that Betamax did in fact win the
Did
home
in fact win
wars.
The okay, yeah, fine. Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Fine.
Because well, it was favored by the gods.
That I'll accept. I'll go along with that. And the video is called The Thread, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Fury says, yeah, and it kind of nudges Ariadne and says, yeah, it's called The Thread. And I'm like, okay, fine, that's pretty good, Fury. But then it's not, because Ariadne helps Theseus to kill the Minotaur with the ball of thread. It's because once you start pulling at the thread, everything unravels. And I'm like, no, but That's not what. Yeah. That's not why you'd nudge Ariadne in the ribs when you're talking about Thread. What are you doing?
Because also in this universe, she doesn't help Theseus do that because Theseus works because for Minos.
And is
gay.
No, and
there's so many actually gay characters in Greek mythology. I know we talked about this last time.
We did,
but it's crazy to pick the non-gay ones and make them gay. Like, there's just pick some of the gay storylines.
Of which there are so many.
Yeah. So this is another thing, and this is a sort of, like, I know that it's not like an exact retelling of the Orpheus and Eurydice myth. It's got parts of it. I know it's not an exact retelling of any kind of particular story. It's got kind of, you know, it's got bits and pieces. It's a kind of mishmash. It's a sort of, you know,
yeah. It's
zombie.
A bit like half remembered.
Yeah, like, it's a bit.
I had
like,
a book of Greek myths when I was seven, and I've not reviewed it.
And there's the guy in, yeah, he's a cat, and cows breathe fire.
Yeah,
I think
the cow with the head of a man.
The cow with
Colin
the cow. The cow with, I think he's called Craig. The cow.
Oh, Craig. Yeah,
he decided he's called Craig the cow.
You're right.
Moo.
They've made me live in a labyrinth.
Well, he's not in a labyrinth. He's technically in a maze. Craig the cow. It's only the Minotaur that gets the labyrinth.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, he's in like a hedge maze at Hampton Court. He's the British Minotaur.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's the British Minotaur.
It's shit being the British Minotaur.
Well, I mean,
where's the British Minotaur from? Where is that accent from?
That's the Birmingham accent. Yeah.
I'm technically owned by the National Trust. I get a terrible holiday package. Little kids get to the centre of the maze to try and milk me. Seem all right. Frankly, I regret taking this gig. I don't get to eat any virgins.
Oh, Jesus
Craig
Christ.
The cow doesn't want to eat any virgins. Craig the cow is a much more law-abiding creature. Yeah.
The worst part is I'm lactose intolerant. Four stomachs and I can't handle it.
He did vote for UKIP.
Yeah.
Craig the cow.
But only due to like abstruse objections to the way that the European Commission works. He was like that 1% of like principled Brexiteers. Like, no, these trade laws are incorrect. They're inefficient. Yeah. Anyway.
It's because he was like, he was trying to run his own dairy farm. The cheese tariffs were killing him.
Oh, don't get him started on the cheese.
The Brussels cheese tariffs. The Brussels commissars and their cheese tariffs. I can't remember what I was saying.
Yeah. So basically, they show this video.
No. I can. I don't understand why they have chosen this particular myth and these particular characters, because I feel like there'd be quite a lot of fruitful ground in seeing what Odysseus is up to, say.
Iphigenia. Get one of the spicier ones.
Get one of the spicier ones.
Whereas what they've done is they've taken Theseus and Ariadne and they've just completely changed every single element of the plot to the point where it's like, why bother?
And we also have some Should we go through it?
I want to stick with this for a minute because basically they say, oh, well, look at this flashback video. This is your life. And, you know, old Charon, Poseidon goes to see Minos and he's like, look, mate, you need to father an heir. But then Minos is like, oh, well, you know, I've got this. There's this prophecy about how my firstborn is going to kill me. And he's like, cool, what we'll do is you'll have twins and then we'll bump off the older twin. And so the older twin is Glaucus, and then Daedalus helps bump him off. But then it turns out that actually Glaucus has been imprisoned in the labyrinth and is in fact the Minotaur. And it's like, no. That your wife fucked a bull. This is...
Yeah, I had
Why
my
is
big...
he a bull then?
I had my...
If it's just your child with your wife, how did he become a bull? I don't understand. Like, okay, the bull fucked your wife because she built a wooden bull outfit and got the bull to fuck her, and she gave birth to a half man, half bull. That's kind of crazy, okay? But you had sex with your wife normal style, and you had twins, one normal human girl and a half man, half bull, is somehow crazier. You've topped it. Congratulations.
He wasn't like a baby. That would be so cute, though. Like a baby Minotaur with the body of a baby and the little bullock head.
Be horrendous to give birth to, though.
Yeah, but twins is pretty bad anyway. So you may as well. You may as well stick a bullock head on one of them.
I mean, I'm inclined to defer to you on the basis of your having been the only one of us to actually give birth. But on the other hand, still, it seems bad. Mm. I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Yeah, the midwife, like, standing at the end of the bed with a little red cape. No, he doesn't want to come out. We've got to coax him.
Well, what we've got to do is we've got to dress the midwife in a kind of wooden bull costume in order to entice the bullock out.
Did you mean for that to sound like a moo?
I was about to say, that really did sound like a Yeah, go for it. That's how you get the Minotaur to come out.
Well, it strongly suggests that Daedalus, even though he's not supposed to be magic, he's supposed to be an inventor, it strongly suggests that it is Daedalus that is responsible for Glaucus being a bull.
Yeah, he's just given him a lot of steroids or whatever.
Yeah.
He's given him the old Marvel movie treatment.
Yeah. But then he, what happened was he was like all set to give him some steroids, and then he got bitten by a bull when Daedalus wasn't looking. Why is he a bull? Also, there's a sort of another thing which seems like it's like Ariadne says, no, but like you're my father's employee. You're not his prisoner. And he's like, oh, no, I am totally his prisoner. And he says that Icarus built the wings in order to get away from his father and then dies. But that's not. Like, that's not right either. That's, like, Icarus is built the wings by Daedalus. This is Daedalus's...
And that's why Icarus flies too close to the sun, because he doesn't understand how the wings work.
Yeah, because Daedalus is, like... This is, like, Daedalus's tragedy. He, like, it's a case of... Like, everyone thinks that the Icarus story is like, a story about, like, not, like, obeying instructions and, like, you know, going beyond your capabilities. It's actually not. It's about filial hubris. It's a punishment for Daedalus for trying to escape his fate that he then loses his son because he thinks that he is, you know, this like brilliant inventor who can do anything.
And it's also about how your children will go woke and disobey you. And that's why you should never even make them any wings in the first place.
Yeah.
The story of Daedalus and Icarus is actually a boomer tragedy.
It's a boomer tragedy. Yeah, if you like. Yeah. So not only is this, because, yeah, like I said, the Glaucus story is one of the odder ones. It's about this, the boy falls into a jar of honey and drowns, and then Aesculapius. It's not Aesculapius, it's the whatever the Greek version of Aesculapius is called, but I can't remember what the Greek version of him is called. Sees a snake and bashes the snake's head in, and then the snake's pal, who is another snake, shows up with this herb and brings the snake back to life, and Aesculapius, witnessing this, gives the herb to the drowned Glaucus and brings him back to life. And
you're actually right. Asclepius is the god of medicine in both Greek and Roman. Same name.
Okay, there you go. I thought
that does sound a bit Greek to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's Asclepius, it's all
Greek to me.
How long have you been waiting to bust that one?
Oh, since we started the show.
Just sitting on that heat until now.
So that, again, like, I'm not overly fussed about them changing the details of the story. The Greeks change the details of these stories all the time. That's fine. That's like a legitimate way of approaching ancient myth. But you've just got to be a bit more respectful of your sources. And also, it has to fucking make sense, because how did Daedalus take that human baby and turn him into a half man, half bull thing?
Yeah.
That breathes fire.
So there's something extraordinarily postmodern about the way this show treats the myths, where it treats them. It seems to, like, it's so odd, because you're absolutely right. There's this extraordinarily strange way that it treats the source material that it's working with. Where on the one hand, it seems to have accurately captured the nature of the relationship between ancient people and the gods, like, where it's this incredibly uncertain thing where they're fickle creatures that don't really care about you, but you'd better pay attention to them or they will screw you over. And that kind of uncertainty is just baked into the world and the way that you live your life, which I think is almost a perfect way of expressing how ancient people mostly understood and interacted with the gods. Mm-hmm. But the myths, that you're right, because they're not using it as a canon. It's this, like, postmodern, like, throwing out references in the way that an episode of, like, Archer would reference something, you know, in the way that like a very clever TV show would use the name of a well-known character to draw your attention to this whole myth. It's like self-referential within this universe without really understanding the nature of those stories and why they're important, or why they would matter in their context. I think you're absolutely right about that, Phoebe, because I couldn't tell why that was bothering me so much, and I think you nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So meanwhile, we have this other plot line going on with Zeus and Hera, where Hera is having an affair with Poseidon. That isn't really particularly explained, other than apparently Poseidon eats it like it's his last meal. That's what he's George Costanza coded.
Poseidon.
Yeah, there we go. There's an option. Yeah. We'll just give the listener a moment to absorb that.
Yeah. God of the sea loves to eat clam. Not surprising.
No. Patrick.
too much. Too explicit.
Yeah, we're having fun. And yeah, so they're having an affair. Zeus discovers that they're having an affair. Because while Hera's out, she's popped out. He's going through all of her little drawers of tongues. The well-known thing that Hera has all these little drawers of tongues that was established a couple of episodes ago. And these little tongues tell you a little story when you open them, sort of like one of those talking birthday cards. You know, they've got
a big mouth Billy Bass.
Yeah, yeah, they're like a library of little WhatsApp voice notes. Yeah, imagine if they sang, like, you know, Proud Mary or something. Yeah, the amusing Hera tongues. And via this, he discovers about the affair, because there's a bit of her just... I don't understand why she would be in the... Because the tongues thing, they're supposed to all be, like, confessions that people have given.
Because she's surrounded... It's the confessions of her Tacitus.
Yeah.
Of the and whenever she's... being pleasured by Poseidon, she's surrounded by her Tacitus.
Oh.
So they're overhearing. It's whatever they overhear.
Oh, okay. Oh, that actually does make sense. My objection to the wall of tongues was actually a bit more rules lawyery, I'm afraid, Pat.
Oh, okay.
Which is that, bearing in mind that they're supposed to have had a kind of unbroken period of divine rule since ancient times, we're presumably not supposed to think that the tongues are a kind of like a recent innovation. This isn't like new god technology. This isn't like the kind of they've brought out a new thing. It's not supposed to be that. You're supposed to think that she's always kept the confessions. Presumably,
it's all obsolete now. We don't use the little parchments now.
Exactly.
We've got the wall of tongues.
Now I've got the wall of tongues. But you know, mark my words. I'm gonna keep my parchment maker.
The Wall of Tongues because, is what Hera calls that, Poseidon.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, sorry.
Because sooner or later, the Wall of Tongues is gonna get obsolete. Like, I am starting to notice how few things that you can even get on the Wall of Tongues. So I'm going to be keeping my parchment. Thank you very much.
It's just a thumb drive now.
Yeah.
The wall of tongues is the mini disc.
Well, they want you tied in on the Wall of Tongues, and then they're going to jack the price up, and suddenly you can't get anything on parchment anymore.
Yeah. They're going to turn the Wall of Tongues into a subscription based service.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to pay a monthly fee as opposed to just owning the tongues.
Yeah. Wall of Tongues forever.
It's going to be a subscription based service. You're going to they drag you in, and then they triple the price, and then they delete Peep Show off it. Fucking sucks.
Yeah, that's absolutely nightmare.
So my objection to the Wall of Tongues is that presumably this is millennia worth of confessions, thousands upon thousands of millions of confessions. How do you decide when there's a turnover? How recent is this wall of tongues? Because it's like floor to ceiling, but it can't be that many. So presumably she's like going along the Wall of Tongues being like, last ever episode of One Foot in the Grave. No, we can record over that. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm assuming one section of it is like the Criterion collection where it's just the classics.
Yeah, we can't. Okay.
Under no circumstances do we get rid of these ones.
That's got like a big sticker on it saying, this is Casablanca, do not record over.
Yeah.
Casablanca, Diana's Funeral, the Blonde Ambition Tour 1989, all of those are sacrosanct.
Yeah, but most of it is like, you know, the contents of the new release shelf at a Blockbuster Video in 1996. Like, we can move that along. Might be nice to see once, but you don't need to play it over and over again.
I'm actually quite hung up on mythical Greek One Foot in the Grave, which would of course be called One Foot in the Boat. Victor Meldrew seeing a swan fucking his wife. I don't believe it. Yeah, that'd be good. One of the last real British sitcom, with like a catchphrase-based sitcom, One Foot in the Grave. Yeah, but, you know.
Pat, you probably have absolutely no idea what One Foot in the Grave is.
I don't. Yeah. No.
Oh, okay. It's a sitcom. the lead character is a, like an old man called Victor Meldrew. It's like from like the early 90s?
Yeah, early to mid-90s.
Yeah, and his whole thing is that he can't believe it. And then stuff like there's an episode where he gets a skip and then someone throws a mattress in his skip and he's mad about that. And then the next morning he gets up and someone's put a whole Citroen 2CV in his skip. and he shouts, I don't believe it.
It was good, One Foot in the Grave.
Describing it makes it sound kind of cheesier than it is.
It's good.
There's an account on Twitter where they do this thing called the Meldrew Point, which is... Because the actor, I forget the name of the actor.
Richard Wilson,
yeah. It's like, he actually wasn't that old when he started playing Victor Meldrew, like the first season. And so people, they just point out when other actors are reaching their Meldrew point, which is where they're the same age as he was in the first episode of Victor Meldrew.
It's the UK equivalent of Wilfred Brimley in, The Fly, maybe? I'm not sure. The Wilfred Brimley, famous, more famous as a spokesperson diabetes. For diabetes. Yeah. Yeah, that who was not actually that old when he played this very old looking character. Paul Rudd passed the Brimley point now. Oh. Oddly enough. Mm. Yeah, no, okay, this makes sense. We've done some cultural translation here. I feel I'm on board. Okay, great. Good. All right, I'm with. I understand the throwaway reference now.
Yeah, perfect. Ideal. And you keep us honest before our many American listeners, Pat. You force us to explain these incredible British lacunae that we love to dredge up. So he finds it out from the tongues. He interrogates and kills one of the Tacitus. Then we get a slightly gory scene where she's got like blood pouring out of her eyes.
So you assume he's done something pretty horrible.
Yeah, he's shown her those about to die.
Nothing could be that cool.
even the gods would not.
No. This is after that. Not even the cruelest. What is that, crueler or not, or less cruel than him skeet shooting his ball boys.
Yeah, that's not good, is it? Like,
no.
Yeah. It also just, I just couldn't, we talked about this last week, but I just couldn't really get the vibe of that. Like, it was, he was being so like jovial about the whole thing, but also they clearly were not involved in his watch going missing.
Yeah, but
it was so, this, it was odd.
But this is why I'm okay with it, is the gods are not supposed to care about people. And that people are a means to an end for them. The gods are jealous and paranoid and weird and greasy. Like, what is so this? I think this word comes to mind all the time as we're watching this show. You're watching Poseidon and Zeus, like, and Hera too. They're kind of greasy, you know, like they're a little slimy, a little sleazy. And that's the vibe the gods have. And it seems accurate to me. And
about to give, like, the most confusing explanation you've ever heard. Right. The first thing you need to understand about the ancient Greek gods is they were Italian spiritually.
Yes, they were. It's look, there's an infinite number of really great bits on the relationship between modern day Greeks and Italians.
Yeah.
And which one is a cheaper knockoff of the other. So there's a lot of ways we could go with that. But I don't want to go into kind of ethnic slander without a good reason.
that's for the Patreon feed only. So subscribe if you want that.
Yeah. If you want artisanal ethnic slander, yeah, you'd better be subscribed to the Patreon.
This week on the Patreon, Pat does his hierarchy of all the Balkan ethnicities. So don't miss that. That's going to be controversial.
Yeah, it's not. You'll be surprised at where I put Slovenes.
His views on Kosovo will take your breath away.
That's look, man. You can fit everything into a hierarchy if you try hard enough.
That's right.
So, where were we? Oh yeah, but basically, the gods are, the capriciousness of the gods is one of the major themes of all myth. That the gods do things for reasons that make sense to them, and that how people feel about that or react to it or what the impact is going to be on people is at best a minor concern for the gods. So from Zeus's perspective, it doesn't really matter whether the ball boys took his watch or not. He's going to shoot them because it makes him feel good in the moment. And that's what the gods do. So I understand the objection,
but that's not really like Zeus's thing. Like, Zeus's antisocial behavior is on the horny axis. It's Hera that's on the revenge axis. Like, I know he does do some murdering, but not like very much. He's too busy being horny.
But the nature of a lightning bolt is that you don't know where it's going to strike.
Okay, and fine. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
That part of the reason that gods of the sky and lightning are so frightening is that you don't know what they're going to do. You don't know when a storm is going to blow up. You don't know if a lightning bolt is going to hit your house or if it's going to hit something else. And you'd better propitiate the gods just to try and cover that base. Because maybe it'll work, but maybe not, you know. So
when I was a teenager,
doesn't bother me.
Fair play. When I was a teenager, I read a kind of true life account in one of my magazines about a girl who had survived being hit by lightning because she had a belly button ring. So it hit the belly button ring, and it kept the lightning outside her body, so it traveled like out through her big toe as opposed to like cooking her internal organs. And I,
that must have been such a hot belly button ring. That must have been like red hot,
boiling. Yeah.
But I mean, that's going to certainly cauterize the hole, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not getting infected for nobody's money.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
But I cut this story out and presented it to my parents as my attempt to get permission to get my belly button pierced.
What if I get
struck by lightning? This will be an effective prophylactic against such a thing occurring. Is that really not what you want from me?
You are sort of playing your parents at their own game there, though, because whilst that is a crazy justification for getting a belly button ring, I can also really seeing it being one that your parents would see the logic in. They'd be like, well, you never know when you might get struck by lightning.
You know what?
So they, like, I could, like, in a different universe, I could imagine you being like, yeah, my dad does have a belly button piercing, but mostly because of his concerns about lightning. Yeah.
Okay. So now I have to know, did you get the belly button piercing?
Of course. That wasn't and, why. But... That was not persuasive at all. They laughed. But I did end up getting one.
Mm. I can't think about belly button piercings. They make me like shudder. There's something about it. I don't know.
Why?
Oh, piercing the soft flesh of the belly. I don't even like someone sticking their finger in my belly button. But the idea of it's real body horror for me.
Oh, dude.
The belly button piercing is.
Wait, have you got a belly button piercing, Pat? That was like such a like. Oh man, you don't know what you're missing.
No, so this is. You and I are not that far apart in age, but I think there is a micro generational difference between an elder millennial such as myself, who came of age, shall we say, in an era defined by midriff bearing, in which
the low-rise jeans, the crop tops,
exactly, yeah, and which was a very specific period of time. It didn't last very long, but it's
it is fully back.
The girlies are once again safe from lightning. Praise be.
It is the weirdest experience seeing like teenagers dressed exactly how I dressed when I was a teenager. It makes me feel like the intervening years did not occur. It is hauntology. Belly button hauntology.
As someone who for whom these like the Britney Spears Hit Me Baby One More Time music video was like an awakening. A belly button piercing to me is it speaks to something deep in the recesses of my teenage soul.
Yeah.
So the idea of not being attracted to that.
Same for me for an eyebrow piercing.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I could see that. That makes perfect sense.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is just a small generational difference.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Frosted blue spikes in the hair. I see that. That's a yes.
I had frosted tips for a very dark moment when I was about 12.
Not frosted tips. No.
I know you used the word blue, which was troubling to me.
No. You frost the tips. You're dying blue. And there's a progenitor of this look. That progenitor is the son of Dr. Evil in Austin Powers 2.
Oh, Seth Green!
Seth Green.
Not blue
Seth
enough,
Green,
Scott.
The man himself. And this particular portrayal was very erotically important to me when I was a teenager.
Huh.
Mm.
Okay. All right.
This is another free one. I gotta stop doing this.
Yeah, Phoebe, this is gonna take me a while to process this one, so I'll get back to you in a week with my thoughts.
That's right.
I have no immediate response to that.
That's right. Finally, silencing men doing reparations. So then we also have a little plot line going on with Eurydice, aka Riddy, which I hate.
Yeah, I hate Canaeus. That too.
They're in the weird dead room. And they watch as Hades takes Nax's soul. Also Nax. I hate that they're calling him Nax. That really infuriates me.
It's annoying. It's a dog's name, isn't it? It's not the name of a prince of Troy. What annoyed me about that is that like when Nax appears again, it's like, okay, fine. So they're not gonna do the thing where like they sort of get you interested in a character who very much is meant to be dead and then turns out not to be dead, and you're like, and then it fucking dies in like the next scene. And so I was like, oh, they haven't done that. Nax is gonna be a character. Oh, okay. No, he's
dead again.
Dead again.
Dead again.
Dead again. Why is he dead again? And when Prometheus is doing his like fucking know-it-all display on his wall, his like fucking, oh, I know something you don't know, you know, like everyone who's like kind of like, you know, like everyone who's like kind of vaguely kind of talking about someone who's like about to be like very, very cancelled. I actually know who it is. Like there's a real kind of whisper network about this. I actually know. I haven't told anyone or, you know, whatever. But
we who are about to be cancelled salute.
We who are about to be cancelled. Exactly.
Yeah.
He pretends that he's going to explain what the fuck's going on. And what he does instead is he shows all the people who are like going to significant to the story. He says some of them know they are, some of them don't know they are. One of them is Eurydice's taciter mother. And what I thought they were going to maybe explain is what the fuck this kind of Hall of the Dead is. Like what's gone on there? What are we saying? Are we saying that the concept of going through the frame is actually like a big con, and Hades is actually just like taking your soul, and so it's actually like it's actually all just like hell. But then
why not just send them all through the frame immediately? Why do the ones who have to have a coin have to wait for 200 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So I too have questions about that, but the whole like Hall of the Dead thing that we're dealing with there, that is essentially how the ancient Greeks actually understood the afterlife.
Yeah.
Is so which, remember how confused we were about the frame and what was going on with that and the idea of rebirth, and we spent a whole bunch of time trying to figure out exactly where they were going with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I think now we know that's a shield to disguise the true horror of the afterlife, which is just that it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's just that you're dead and it's dark and it's cold and you don't get to hang out. You don't get to talk to people. You don't get to do anything. You're not reborn. It's just, that's it.
Yeah. And I'd rather be like the poorest of the poor than king of all the dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there we have our answer to that question.
Okay.
But how exactly that figures into the plot, I couldn't tell you. I can only make so many excuses for this show.
But also, Eurydice, like when she sees Nax's soul being eaten by Hades, who is supposed to be like in thrall to Zeus in some way, which I don't think really, really bears out. Like I know Zeus is like the king of the gods, but being the king of the dead, like you're doing better on numbers, just like sheer numbers.
Mm. Well, Hades, he's a staunch monarchist, you know, he respects the hierarchy. He's like Princess Anne.
But unless they're doing it like Hera's tongues, and the people in the Hall of the Dead get overwritten every so often, which presumably is not what we're trying to say. So
at a dark moment one week, I taped over Achilles with Hollyoaks. No, I regret it now, but I didn't want to get out of bed. I was in a depression onesie.
Look.
Hades does seem like he would have a depression onesie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a bit of a downer of a job. It's not good for your mental health being king of all the dead. They really try and bring you down with their problems. You know what I mean?
It's very important to practice self-care if you're the king of the dead, and also
take care of your mentals.
Mm. Quite honestly, you're just getting some really bad seasonal affect disorder. If Hades took a vitamin D supplement, he'd be in a completely different position.
Honestly, one of my mates is king of all the dead, and he puts a brave face on it, but you know it really does get him down a lot, and he doesn't.
I can tell. No, I can tell he's suffering.
It's lonely at the top.
He never talks about it because that's what we've been taught as men.
Yeah. That's what I always say to him, mate, you've got to take holiday. You've got to get down to Botswana. You've got to really connect with the African soil. You'll feel better.
This was a discussion in last week's episode, Pat. Like, this is not just arbitrary. I promise you that is not just arbitrary.
I'm not being paid by the Botswanan Tourist Board to advertise it as a men's mental health destination.
But you should be. Mm. I'm seeing a lot of opportunities for synergy here.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah. I reckon Botswana would be a good trip, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that we're in the pocket of big Botswana.
No, but you know what? It's one of the African countries you don't often hear a lot about it. But I feel like they've quietly got it under control. You know?
You don't hear a lot about it. I kind of feel like Botswana low-key fell off.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what sucks if you're a country like Botswana. You hear a lot about the African countries that are poorly managed, and you don't hear about the success stories like Botswana, because you know that's what sells papers.
It's true.
Because that's what sells papers.
If you're an African, you sound like Jonathan Price in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh, Mr. Bond, I want you to practice self-care.
The most terrifying Bond villain of all.
Mm, yeah, it was just Murdoch. Incredible. The wokest Bond film.
Honestly, that one holds up better than I thought it would. I watched it again recently. Michelle Yeoh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Truly
Bond
amazing.
Bond is working with the Chinese to murder Rupert Murdoch. Incredible.
I'm sold.
Yeah, what was this fucking, you know, Maoist entryism they did on James Bond for one movie?
Dude, the 90s were weird. it's so odd. Anytime anybody wants to treat the 90s as some sort of like norm from which we've deviated, I'm like, do you remember how weird the 90s were? Like,
what was it with that?
It was very odd. Mm. It was very odd. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have ever read any Tom Clancy books.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, like Tom Clancy is the 90s writer, in my opinion. And like those things could only have been written in that specific decade. They could only have been popular in that specific period of time, because at no other point in time would any of that shit have made any sense at all.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like every Tom Clancy book hinges on like an incredibly niche, like, you know, due to the changeover of code books that happens once a year, the Russians have gained control of a particular class of US submarine off the coast of Alaska. And only one man who lives in Baltimore is able to stop it. But he has to, like, run a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really, considering the fact that guy lives in Maryland, they didn't do a lot with like, Old Bay spicing on anything. Like that was never a plot point, and I'm sad that it wasn't.
Well, he was waiting for the SponCon deal. He's like, if you want Old Bay in the books, you better pay.
True.
You better Old Pay.
You want to see Old Bay, you better Old Pay.
Yeah. And then I'll season my books with a little product placement. Yeah. Imagine that, you get a free like sachet of Old Bay seasoning with a Tom Clancy book.
Now that's
synergy.
Oh, yeah.
You had me at Old Bay.
Yeah.
Forget about whatever Milo's up to with Botswana. That's real.
Whatever
synergy.
I'm up to. Well, let's be clear. I'm not up to anything.
Yet. We're angling. This is what angling for a deal looks like.
Yeah, if the Botswana tourist board are interested.
For God's sake, don't torpedo this. We need it.
Yeah. This is a pro Botswana podcast.
I'm still trying to tie up the Vatican Skims deal. Are we not doing that anymore?
No, we are, but you got to have multiple irons in the fire. Like,
I can't have multiple irons in the fire. It's too complicated.
There's got to be like a Botswanan cardinal, right? Surely.
Don't know.
Yeah, I reckon we could do
synergy.
A crossover. Yeah.
Let's check in on the conclave and find out.
Yeah.
This is I for one have nothing but confidence that one of these is going to work out.
Yeah. Nothing could be more men's mental health than the conclave.
It's true. It's just guys being dudes.
Yeah, blokes getting together and just talking about their feelings, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wearing their red dresses.
Yeah, there's as we've discussed, there's nothing there's nothing gayer than a bunch of straight men wearing dresses.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That is right.
I've seen Scottish rugby fans.
Yeah. Jesus. God.
Well, we're not getting that SponCon deal.
No, that's again. Thanks, Phoebe.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking. This podcast banned from Murrayfield. We were going to be doing it live from the commentary box, but I guess that's over.
Some years ago, I was going on holiday to Rome, and it was during the Six Nations, and Scotland were going to be playing Italy out in Rome, and for some reason, I don't know how it lined up like this, but I was on the same flight with like a group of Scottish rugby fans, mm-hmm. as on the way out as I was on the way back, and it was like a really interesting kind of sparrow in the hall metaphor for like the whole of life and all of its experiences in 3 days, because on the way out these lads they all had their kilts on with hoodies, and they were having just like such a great time. They were just brimming with good cheer, and then
waving
on the
slices
way
of deep fried pizza at the Italians to antagonize them.
Exactly. Yeah. going in the stands with everyone had like just like a kind of bundle of dried spaghetti, and they were just like just cracking it in half in front of the Italians to taunt them.
It's unsportsmanlike.
And Scotland lost very badly to Italy, and I saw the same group of lads on the way back home, and they were all just like sort of sitting in these like disconsolate little huddles, like orangutans out in the rain. They were all just like they still had their kilts.
Did you just compare Scottish rugby fans to orangutans out in the rain?
Yeah. You know, that's like just
a very
just a
similar
bit like,
image.
Just a bit like with their kilts and their jumpers.
When you consider the levels of gingerness in Scotland and how wet it is.
I felt so sad for them.
That's genuinely one of the most perfect descriptors I think I've ever heard. So again, Phoebe, I thought we were supposed to save the niche ethnic insults for the Patreon.
Yeah, how do they compare to Slovenes? Do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah,
it's
or,
not,
or Monten-
it,
what's,
it's not,
where
it's
are you on Montenegrins?
Insult. I like orangutans. I would be,
so do I.
I would be honoured to be compared to an orangutan.
I don't care for Slovenes, on the other hand. But and then the only other plot point is that Orpheus reaches the far side of the Styx, and he's ready to, you know, do his Hades business.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Okay. So
what?
I honestly, this show is weird. I'm not prepared to say it's good. I've done a lot of apologizing for it in both the literal sense and also the ancient sense of doing an apologia.
Yeah.
But I am glad we're watching it.
Yeah.
If that
makes
sense.
I'm having fun. I'm not saying I'm not having fun. Hang on. I've got one.
It makes me feel knowledgeable about ancient myths, which not a lot of things do, because myths are really not my forte. And then
mine either.
I'm just constantly like, that cannot be right. I'm really a Roman history and Greek philosophy guy, but even I am like, that is definitely not.
Oh, I'm sure that every so often messaging me like, is that right? Because that doesn't feel like it's right.
Yeah, I don't think that. What?
Well, no, I stand by my initial note, which we talked about last week, which is just I'm pig sick of Prometheus. I have got a note here which just says, "Oh, plot," and then the next.
How wrong you were!
Next note just says, "Oh, wait, never mind."
Which is actually how this show treats plot. That is just a literal description of this show's relationship to plot, which I appreciate. you pretty much fucking nailed it there.
Because I've also put like, so what's Hera up to then? Has she been plotting against Zeus? And then I've just put, she is now, I suppose, because he's killed one of her priestesses and she's not very happy about that.
This is dumb from Hera, though. You know, it's like plotting against Putin if you're like in the cabinet. It's like, well, what do you think's going to happen if he's not president anymore? What, you think you're going to be president? No, you're all going to go to jail.
Well, I guess they're just a bit like, look, I'm not fussed about that. I live in a bungalow. There's nothing he can do. I live in a bungalow. I don't eat sushi. So what's he going to do to me? Fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true.
I don't even like sushi. So I'd like to see what he can possibly do to me. something that I didn't understand. When Riddhi sees Nax having his brain eaten, she faints because it hurt her in some way to see this horrible event happening. Even though she's not supposed to be still alive, she is dead, so there's no particular reason why it would hurt.
Well, because in this universe, no one has seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So that's the first time they've ever seen a brain being eaten.
Well, yeah. Kners feels nothing when he sees it. And this is supposed to be significant in some way. But I don't understand why.
Riddhi is special somehow. I don't think there's anything more to it than that.
But it doesn't.
I don't think you didn't miss something. If that's. Yeah.
She's just like me with the belly button piercings, but her thing is brain eating. Because she didn't, it's a microgenerational difference. You see, Kaneas grew up in the era where it was very trendy to be having your brain eaten.
I see.
He finds people having their brain eaten quite sexy.
He was in a very shaved head kind of period.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of flashback about Kaneas coming out as a trans boy, which I obviously don't object to, but it doesn't seem to be doing anything to drive the plot forward. I literally have just put Glycus is the Minotaur. What the fuck are you talking about?
That
I'm with you, Milo. That really fucked me off. Like, why is he a bull then?
How did he become a bull?
I don't even understand.
You're going to have twins. Understand. One of them is the bull and one of them is the cuck. There you go.
I mean, to be fair, those babies are really cute.
Babies are very
they
cute.
Are really sweet.
But the... Really cute. The bull cuck was my breaking point for today.
Yeah. Okay.
You get me with one in every episode of this that we do.
Yeah.
That was the one.
One baby has to sit in the chair in the corner of the room watching the other one get breastfed. And that is the cuck baby.
God, that's weird. That's a weird thing to say.
And the mum's like, you like to watch, don't you, you little bitch? The other baby is just taking big old glurps of milk.
Phoebe, you are aware of the Instagram account that's just reviews of hotel cuck chairs?
I'm so glad. Like, I never thought I would be happy to hear the words hotel cuck chairs, but I'm so glad that's the way that sentence ended, considering what we were discussing.
I'm assuming that's Milo's point of reference for this this bit.
Come and stay at the hotel cuck chair. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I don't think that's where he got it from. I think he brought that in from home.
He brought his own cuck chair.
That's what that chair is next to him.
What if there isn't one?
What
are you gonna do?
Clean?
Fuck your own wife? Come on!
You gonna sit on the floor like some savage?
Yeah. I am not sitting on that cuck chair because some promises about disinfection were made that have not been kept.
Yeah. Well, and also the angle when you're sat on the floor is like that could be anyone's wife getting fucked up there. There's no point. You got to be able to see. What are you gonna do? Stand up with your hands on your hips like a dad watching a film? Come on, ridiculous.
I did do that last night. I was watching a movie with my kids, and I was just standing there with my arms folded.
Yes, let's go.
Damn it.
You were the movie cuck.
Dang it.
Oh no.
Oh no.
This is,
oh no.
Movie right. Cucked by your own kids. Now that's your prophecy, Pat.
Damn it.
Right. We gotta wrap this up.
We're done here.
We got real out of hand here toward the end.
We're donezo.
What a pleasure it's been.
We'll see y'all next week.
We will.
Yeah.
We have a Patreon. Also, it's $5 a month. You can subscribe and you get twice as much of this. The amount that you're getting now, if you're a free subscriber, you'll get even more. Twice the amount, precisely.
Yeah, if you'd like some niche ethnic slander, that's where we go for that.
100%. Also, I'm coming to every city in Australia pretty much in March and April. So if you want to see stand-up comedy in Australia, check that out. It's on my website. Thank you very much. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.